Are you filled with fear, doubt, worry about the future of our country? Do you feel the urgency to act before it's too late? If yes, then this podcast is for you. It's time for us all to confront the critical issues threatening our nation's fabric, our democracy itself, irregardless of our political stance. If you're ready to face reality, handle the tough questions, and find real solutions, then here's your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux.
Welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast. I'm your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux. Can we save it? That's what we're exploring in this podcast series. And for me, the answer is a resounding yes, we can. We must. So this show is where we explore alternatives to being afraid. And in the first five episodes, I offered this background framework that I highly recommend you listen to first. It provides a good foundation for what now? And then we interview guests who have gone from being afraid, angry, or hopeless to become advocates for our nation, to live into the promise of our founders, each dedicating themselves to a better future. Now, I like to start each show with a question that we'll explore together. And today's question is, how does art inspire us to be better citizens? And to explore this question with us today, I'd like to introduce to you Suzanne Brennan Furstenberg. Now, in 2021, artist Suzanne Brennan Furstenberg blanketed the National Mall for 17 days with 701,000 white flags, each marking a life lost to COVID-19. 20,000 visitors personally dedicated their flags to loved ones. The exhibit was entitled, In America, Remember. And the art was judged by Artsy magazine as one of the 12 best worldwide public art exhibitions of 2021. Washingtonian magazine named Furstenberg a Washingtonian of the year. She has traveled to 24 states interviewing people who are suffering or recovering from drug addiction. And her resulting seven installation art series, The Empty Fix, is launching nationwide to destigmatize addiction. Currently, she's speaking around the country about how political extremism, when understood as an addiction, can be cured. She deeply researches each topic, then creates art. From microscript drawings to 20-acre public participatory installations. And her art attracts viewers through beautiful aesthetics and then delivers its powerful message. Suzanne Brennan Furstenberg, welcome to Terrified Nation.
Thank you so much, Debbie Lynn. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you today.
So when we were kind of warming up here, you were talking about how challenging it is for you to think about the future in personal terms. So I'm just going to like lay it out there and out you that this may be a challenging conversation for you, because the first thing we want to do is get your personal vision out there and then talk a little bit about how you invite others to think about the future too. And this is all part of a research project that's imagining a future we actually want. So this is about your preferred future, not about what you think is likely or probable. And to see your preferred future, we're going to actually do some time travel today and use a little bit of that creativity you have. And we're going to go within your current life. We recommend somewhere between 2 or 20 years, but you really get to pick. What sounds right for you?
I think we're looking at 2039, 15 years out.
15 years. All right, here we go. Yeah. Well, let's, feel free if you want to close your eyes to take a couple of deep breaths here. And the time machine as we get in here is going to whisk us away to 2039. Now, when we get there, what I want you to do is imagine your preferred future and observe yourself there. So you get to be your 2024 self, observing your 15-year-old or 2039 self.
Yeah.
And we're pulling into the 2039 station. Ding! Here we are.
My, that was fast.
I know. It's a really fast time machine here. We're going to climb out here of the time capsule. And I just want to ask you, like, well, where are we?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? We are on the National Mall, a place with which I'm quite familiar. And let me point you over to this special corner, which I can't quite identify yet. But look at this beautiful glade. Look at all those trees and the white benches. And you'll note that there's a fountain, and that sound of water is so calming. And what we're at is the permanent memorial that was installed 5 years ago in honor of the pandemic. It was added to the mall to give us into the future a reminder that we have to care for each other so we don't allow disaster to be any worse than they are.
That is just beautiful. And I know that when I went to the COVID memorial that you did in 2021, I remembered having my breath just taken away by the immense number of individual white flags that was hard to imagine until I got to your exhibit. And so I love that you're carrying that theme, if you will, into your future. And so you may have answered this one already, but our next question is, what will you be most proud of in 2039?
I think as we stand here in 2039 and are thinking about what there is to be proud of, I think my greatest two sources of pride are that I've inspired people to use art as a strong visual communications tool in the last 15 years because they have used art to break through echo chambers, which were only getting meaner and smaller and more divisive. And then the other thing is that I've helped in my art to make people have broader views of topics. I've enlarged or enriched people's thinking by my choices of art installations and my uses of art in the past 15 years. So I feel validated. You see, I'm an optimist, as you can tell, but I feel validated that art has come to the rescue.
Well, we definitely know art has a place in this, and it sometimes bypasses our rational minds. And that's part of, you know, why what you do is so valuable. But kind of moving on to this next question, I want you, like, we're here at the National Mall in 2039 looking at this exhibit. But I want to take you back a little bit to, like, how do you spend your, like, average day? What do you do from the time you wake up in the morning?
I wake up and you see, even the act of waking up is different for me because it's in that liminal space between sleep and wakefulness that the best solutions to problems arrive and the best ideas for art creation emerge. And so I have to start each day quietly so I can access that information, those ideas, the solutions before they disappear. So it's a quiet start. I maybe take a few notes so that I don't forget what I have imagined and probably bike on the towpath to wake my physical body up now that my thought processes are already established. And then I get to work, go to the studio and start with meetings with people, readings on topics. And believe it or not, 15 years hence, I am still working to use art to change minds because that's what I do and I don't have to retire. There's a certain joy. Some people might be horrified by the thought that I never want to retire, but you know, I was in Florida just this past weekend and I talked with a man who had retired after a 40-year career as a firefighter. And I said, oh, wow, you know, how good this is for your body, for you to be able to retire. And he said, I'm bored to death. So we know that we all need to feel a sense of personal significance, not even in the past, but in the current. And I carry that with me because, yes, the In America installation was one of the biggest and most profound things that I had done to date, but there's more to come. I feel a keen sense of responsibility for that which has not yet revealed itself to me as needing to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, as you're, doing your slow wake up process and then biking on your trail and going to the art studio and never retiring, which I assume is in the Washington, D.C. area since we started at the National Mall,
Yes.
I really want to know, like, how do you feel most of the time?
I'm optimistic. I have always had a sense of people as being basically good. And I think life experiences change people and layer on them parts that really aren't true to themselves. And I think that's what is my guiding light, is my optimism. And so I see people as basically, in a positive light and maybe just needing help.
I
Help.
love that. I think you and I share that in some ways, in that belief that humans are primarily good. As you observe this 2039 self that you are, what can you notice your maybe three to five priority values or qualities might be another word?
So let me say what I hope I have. And I think the most important quality I need to have is adaptability. It takes my breath away, the rate of change that is happening now. I was at a conference this past weekend in which we talked about all sorts of things. One of the ideas of which was using blockchain to capture knowledge, to preserve knowledge as we know it, so that we will have a unified base of core, facts. And that just gives an idea. Like when I was born, we had encyclopedias, and now we're talking blockchain, I mean, used Wikipedia to get there. I think adaptation, the ability to adapt and to accept constant change, is just essential. The second quality that I hope I embody is curiosity, because curiosity is the best thing to pull us out of judgment. And boy, we have learned to be judges. I mean, turn on the TV, all these shows, it's all judging. Who's got the best voice? Who has the best act? Which one of the housewives is the best? We just judge. And so I think the more curious we are, the less we need to rely on assumptions. And then the last would be creativity. I hope that my brain synapses are continuing to or improving upon new neural pathways, the constant creation of new neural pathways, so that creativity just continues to get better and better for me.
I love that. So just to recap, adaptability
Yeah.
and curiosity and creativity.
And it's change. The theme through there is change and acceptance.
Yeah, it will. And I'm hearing underneath all of that, those are the three qualities that you actually need for resilience.
Absolutely. Especially the adaptivity. I
Yeah.
mean, resilience is one of those things that we have somehow lost our path on. And I'd like to just talk about one of these things. I spent last weekend with 150 or 175 complete strangers, and we all got to know one another and learn from one another. And so after I ended that weekend and came back here to DC, I went to the grocery store the next morning, and I'm like looking at strangers differently. I'm looking at them as though like an interesting book that I would love to read. I saw the value in strangers rather than fear. We've raised a whole generation, a whole couple of generations now on stranger danger and don't talk with people and you never know who you're talking to on the internet. But in person, we need to have a different respect for and curiosity about strangers. And that's one of the themes I would love to pursue in my art, find ways to use art to help strangers discover one another. There's no greater honor than being allowed into someone's life. And if you will allow me, I've been a hospice volunteer for 25 years.
Oh, please, yes.
And that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons why I've continued to do it. First of all, as a hospice volunteer, one often gets more than one gives because it's such an honor to be allowed into someone's life, especially at one of the hardest times they'll ever face. But to be allowed there and to communicate about things that are so much more important than the weather or sports scores, that's cherished space. And I hope to use art to help people experience that.
It sounds to me like your hospice work has really influenced your art. And I'm wondering how that has helped change perhaps how you interact with these 150 to 175 strangers. Because I can tell you, I have a little heart attack thinking about going into a room with people I don't know that many. And while I intellectually know that like these are good people and I'm going to know a few of them by the time I leave, you come away with a kind of a, I think you, in the note you sent to me, you said, I went into a room with 150 strangers and now I have 150 new friends and acquaintances. How did that happen?
Well, let me be frank. It was a Renaissance weekend, and people can look these up. I was very, very honored to be invited to participate. It's a whole weekend of panels and presentations, and every single person participates. Every single person shares information, knowledge, experiences from their own walk of life. And so when you have an even playing field like that, you can have astronauts talking to artists, talking to lawyers, talking to screenwriters, you know, because you've already been told that everyone has something to give. If only we could go through life understanding that who you judge to be the least of us still has something to teach, to give, to share, that's when we open ourselves to others.
I
That's
love
that
that.
curiosity versus judgment, right?
It definitely being willing to risk also. There's a sense that I'm having right here about like some people are like, no, I can't risk that much, but yet curiosity opens you up to so much more
It
than
really does. It really does. If I could share one more quick story. As a hospice volunteer, I was assigned a woman who had already gotten rid of, chewed up, and spit out two other volunteers. She was in a nursing home and she, it just was, it was a difficult situation. So I said I would try. And it took all my resilience and patience and curiosity. But I discovered that she had been mentored by Eleanor Roosevelt. That Eleanor Roosevelt had mentored this woman and helped her gain a spot in government, and that she had been instrumental in creating one of the first welfare programs. And yet people just saw her as a cranky older woman. You know, we have to understand and respect that people have a lot to give us if we'll just take the time and energy and have the curiosity to find out what it is.
Well, and one of the things I've learned in doing these interviews is that everybody wants to contribute. It's not just that they have something to contribute, but they actually want somebody to receive it. And it's.
And I love that you mentioned that because that's at the core of our self-worth. That gives us personal significance. I was reading a book today that's called What Rewiring for Love. And one of those self-help books. I never read self-help books, but this one I picked up. And it mentioned that self-worth and personal significance is not something we create in ourselves, but it's something that we gain after it's reflected back to us by others. If we think about political extremism as being centered on or being rooted in a lack of self-worth or a lack of personal significance, then imagine the good that can happen if we all take responsibility for nurturing other people's self-worth. Like, we could end political extremism if we could somehow figure out how to do that.
It's so funny that you mentioned that because what you're talking about here is something that I learned back as a teenager when I was reading Ayn Rand and Nathaniel Brandon in their Libertarian. And Nathaniel Brandon specifically was like, our self-esteem is based on what we contribute to the society. And he was, and so that's been translated into a million different directions, but it sounds very similar to what you're saying right now.
With one difference, as reflected back to us by society,
Right.
meaning you can do all the good deeds in the world, but what really cements that to a strong sense of personal significance is seeing that it's made a difference.
Right. Yeah, and
And
that's having the receiver. Yes. So somebody receives it with pleasure, and with reward. So I love that. We actually have two questions left if I can guide steer us back on track here. And I know as we look at your 2039 self, and we're on the mall where you inspired a permanent COVID memorial, and you've actually inspired a whole lot of people to think about their participation in society differently through your art. What does the community that supports this preferred future need to include?
The community needs to have a better understanding of how fear has been used in the past to manipulate them. And they need to understand that they have the power to end that manipulation.
So
I
that
think.
sounds to me like a lot of self-aware individuals.
Self-aware and self-empowered.
Okay. Anything else that your community needs to include?
Two other things: connectivity. They need to have ways to instantly connect with other people. If only we could wear bracelets or jackets or something that would alert someone else that we have something in common. We need on ramps into other people's lives, into other people's presence. Also, I think people need to have a mission orientation. The human condition is tough. We face so many needs and have so many curtailments on our resources. The human condition is tough, but I think a mission orientation is what gets us out of ourselves and gets us more focused on a common goal. And that to me can help end the othering. It can disconnect fear as a source of motivation, and it can give people a lot of personal significance by channeling energies into common goals.
Welcome to American future. Somehow you just like ended on exactly the right note. No, actually, we have one more question. We're not quite done yet.
Okay.
All right, we're going to bring it home with this one because I know you're doing a lot right now. So we're going to come back to present day. And what are you doing today that is going to influence or co-create that community that supports you in 2039?
I am creating an art project which will help people reconceptualize others in a different way. It will help that give them an entree into the lives of strangers. How's that?
I love that. And I love that. And given that I've seen some
some
been involved,
initial
let me just
thoughts.
Say, yeah, just let me say, like, since I've have actually talked with you about this project, I cannot wait to see what it actually turns into in the real world. So, and once we get it out. So I'd like to end our interview with an invitation. And this invitation is to spend 5 minutes every day thinking about your future self, feeling those feelings, and including a sense of awe and wonder. This is based on neuroscience research that shows we will subconsciously begin to create what we focus on. So the choice is ours. We can co-create the future we prefer, like you're doing already, and do that instead of choosing from these dystopian options that are presented to us. For listeners out there, if you would like to participate in the National Research Project, visit AmericanFuture.us. Suzanne, thank you so much for being with us today.
Debbie Lynn, thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here with you.
So in closing today's show, I would like to thank you, the listeners of Terrified Nation podcast, for giving a damn about our nation. We may be terrified today, but we can do better. We can save the USA. Join me next time.
So that's it for today's episode of Terrified Nation. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you listen and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week who posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $15,000 private VIP day with Debbie Lynn Molyneux herself. Be sure to head on over to TerrifiedNationPodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Debbie Lynn's gift and join us on the next episode.